Welcome to another Health and Happiness Hour on KGVM FM 95.9 radio or KGVM.org on internet. This program can be heard at 7 p.m. on Monday evenings and Thursday mornings, or be heard anytime on the Health and Happiness section of KGVM.org. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with co-host Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, in association with the Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association. We bring you this program, which deals with areas of community interest, particularly in the area of mental health. And thank you to Bob Wall, the radio engineer, and everything KGVM. Now, Dr. Suzanne Wood introduces our program.
Good evening. My husband, the psychologist, Dr. Wood here, has often noted that most of us have a misconception about life. We seem to perceive that a normal, quote-unquote, life is easy. Not so. According to all of his training and experience, Dr. Wood has often said that he agrees with M. Scott Peck in his book, The Road Less Traveled, who says life is difficult. Dr. Wood proposed that if we start with that concept, we will be better equipped to manage the hard parts and to fully enjoy and emphasize the positive aspects. This evening, we have with us a speaker who helps others find the positive parts of life, and then use those good things to offset the difficulties. We have with us Daniel Sather of the Suffer Out Loud Coalition. Welcome, Danny.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
We're pleased to learn of your group, and we'd love to know, how did this great community effort come about, Danny? And what do you mean by suffer out loud?
Suffer out loud. I love that you asked that, because some people, they don't get it right at first. And they're like, I don't understand. But it's kind of the center of our mission, that nobody should have to suffer in silence. And so our goal is to really encourage people to suffer out loud and come together to destigmatize talking about mental health struggles and suicide loss. So Suffer Out Loud was actually founded by a Bozeman local. Her name is Cassie Jackson. She lost her sister to suicide in 2008 and just really experienced feeling a lot of isolation and grief. People weren't quite sure how to respond when they'd find out the news. She felt that it was really hard to get people to open up, and just kind of realizing that there's still just such a huge stigma about it. And so she wanted to create a nonprofit that would begin addressing some of those issues with the community. And that's kind of how we started. Does that answer your question?
That's beautiful. I've been reflecting as I learn more about your group, how impressed I am that you all took the bull by the horns. It doesn't require a master's or a PhD or an MD to start helping. You all are not necessarily trained therapists or mental health counselors. You are concerned citizens trying to help.
Correct. Actually, I'm a staff member. I'm the first and only staff member. And being founded by Cassie, I think she in the past has been in tech. And if you take the trainings, I've taken a number of suicide prevention trainings. I'm getting ready to jump into QPR suicide prevention training. They really like to emphasize that you don't have to be a licensed mental health care professional to intervene when somebody's in a crisis, to participate in prevention, and I truly believe that it takes a community to make prevention happen. So, we actually just brought on a few new board members, and for the first time, we have a licensed therapist on our board who kind of is there to help help guide us. We don't provide any direct services. Our goal is to kind of bridge the gap between accessing services and the person who needs them by both destigmatizing, but also addressing that, you know, there is a financial barrier there for a lot of people. There are barriers there just with access and living in urban areas. And then also accessing certain demographics of providers, you know, for folks who want to see somebody with a shared background. There's all of these different kinds of barriers. And then just accepting that you need help as well. And so starting those conversations and allowing people the opportunity to seek the help that they need with support. So.
Well, gosh, Danny, I really don't think that's fair. You're expecting everybody to help. You're expecting all of us not to just leave it up to the professionals.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, suicide loss is so uniquely difficult, and I spend a significant amount of time on the phone with folks who have lost loved ones to suicide, and, you know, grief in general is really complex and confusing and weird. Grief from suicide loss are all of those things with the added layer of really you don't get an answer. You know, like my father passed away from cancer, but I know why. I know why he passed away. Oftentimes we just don't fully understand, and you go through all these unanswered questions that are really hard to move through and can kind of stunt your grief just a little bit. So.
And it's affecting our youth as well. We had Carl Roston on the program several times, who's the statewide suicide prevention coordinator, and he said that following COVID, suicide attempts by teens increased 4 times. It got 4 times more likely than it had been. So what you're talking about influences all ages, I would assume.
Yeah, all ages, all demographics. I mean, mental health is health. We all have it. Everybody has health. And so I think that's just one of the things that we really try to remind the community when talking about it is like, you have mental health. Maybe it's great right now, but at some point, you know, everybody feels sad and everybody struggles. Life has ups and downs, and it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to sit with your pain and your grief because it's natural and it's completely human. And sitting with that is how you can eventually find those lighter sides of life.
I'm remembering a study Bozeman Hospital did 3 or 4 years ago in which they surveyed the entire Gallatin Valley to see what is your biggest medical problem? Is it cancer? Is it heart disease? What is your biggest medical problem? And they sent this survey out across Gallatin County, and what came back? The number one medical problem was mental health.
Yeah, that's not at all surprising. I mean, Montana as a whole has been in the top 5 in the nation for suicide rates for the past 30 years. And there are a lot of different factors, I think, that play into that. One of them, interestingly enough, is altitude. There's a correlation, a positive correlation between suicide rates and higher altitudes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never knew that until I started this job. And I was like, well, that actually makes sense. Less oxygen, you know. Obviously, other ones include, you know, we are kind of at the drinking state. There's a big drinking culture here.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe a pretty significant number of suicides happen with some sort of substance use.
Mm-hmm.
There's also just the kind of pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of mentality here. Don't ask for help. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
just those old thoughts and that it's like, it's okay not to ask for help. It actually is better if you just take care of it yourself and figure it out. And that we all need help sometimes. And then for those urban areas, yeah, just even finding the access to somebody who's close enough to you, or making sure that you have the technology to do telehealth, which is one thing I think that mm-hmm. COVID gave us that actually is a benefit. But yeah, there's lots going there. I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago for kind of tearing up my ankle, and they didn't have they didn't have a room for me, so I'm just in the hallway, you know, on one of the beds. And I'm a big baby about pain, so I'm crying and I'm wearing my Suffer Out Loud t-shirt, and one of the doctors passes by and he's like, that's an appropriate t-shirt for today.
Oh.
We're here. And we got into a whole conversation about suicide, and one of them estimated, and obviously they didn't like do a survey or have, you know, exact numbers, but they estimated at any given time, day or night, 24/7, there are always at least 3 to 5 patients in the ER for suicidality. Which was actually mind-boggling to me, but I guess not surprising.
It shouldn't be, and yet it still is. It's a like an earthquake of human responses here. While we're mm-hmm. Taking in all of this, could you just briefly go ahead and say the phone numbers somebody could call if they're listening and they're having mental health difficulties right now, or a family member, and then we'll go back over that again toward the end.
You bet. If you feel like you're in crisis or you need support to help somebody through a crisis situation, I would say 988 is definitely the first place you should call, and you can call that anywhere in the nation 24/7. 365, and always reach somebody who is there to support you. 988 is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Here in Bozeman, it is run by the Help Center. And the Help Center, I believe they also provide crisis counseling in person and in office during operating hours, but they always have somebody on the line for 988. So you will also be speaking to somebody local who kind of understands the environment that we live in here. Did you want me to go through a list of resources? We have a variety of them.
Yes. So first, cool. before we do that, tell me how your agency works, and then maybe we could segue into the different points of service.
Sure. So how Suffer Out Loud works?
Yes.
We have a number of different programs, and like I said, we don't provide direct services. We sit in the middle there to help people get connected to the services they need. One of our biggest programs are our mental health care scholarships, and I open that application once every month, every third Friday of the month at 12 o'clock Mountain Time. And it's actually really easy. It's just first come, first serve. It's a 7 or 8 question form. And if you get it in, you pretty much get the funding for up to 12 sessions at up to $150 per session, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our biggest program. It's our fastest growing program as well. They used to fill up in like 3 to 5 minutes. So that's when we opened the quarterly. So I made sure that when I came on, I was like, we need to switch to monthly because it's really tough for some people to have to, you know, put in their alarm and then leave work and then do this application really fast and get it in on time before it fills up. So it's awesome to be able to offer that monthly. We also do monthly workshops. This month we're partnering with the Help Center to bring QPR suicide prevention and awareness training, and QPR stands for question, persuade, and refer. Monthly workshops look a variety of different ways. A lot of them are very creative, like watercolor or We've done theater before, or they can look like a fly tying workshop. It's just something that usually a community member, or we partner with a local business, something that we just bring to folks who are interested in learning a new skill that might be helpful in helping them cope for through mental health struggles. And then working to open up those conversations by bringing people together as we learn a craft. Those are our two biggest programs. Another program is resource distribution. We'll distribute crisis resource cards at no cost to any place that requests them. And they can just usually it's local businesses or organizations that they'll keep them in their office. A lot of therapists keep them in their office to refer patients when insurance changes, or maybe they need to meet a deductible, whatever the case may be, or if they don't sit in their network. So yeah, free resource distribution. And then we really lean into storytelling a lot to help towards destigmatize talking about mental health and mental health struggles. So we have a blog online where community members will submit their mental health story, provide resources that have helped them work through mental health struggles. And we also have folks who jump onto our Instagram. We have a really actually active social media, and people will take over our Instagram story and share a day of what self-care looks like to them. Those are really our main programs. Other than that, people often reach out to me for help finding a provider. I do a lot of the heavy lifting for folks who just don't know where to turn or where to start, or maybe they're just struggling so much that even starting is too hard. And so I'll make the phone calls and I'll do the research and I will make referrals for them so that they can get the help that they need.
That's impressive, Danny. Do you get into the schools very much?
We haven't since I've been on. That being said, in end of this month, I will be traveling, touring with the Gallatin County Sheriff's Department and to a few of the schools around Gallatin County here, doing some suicide prevention with them and bringing them resources. And so that's something I'm definitely leaning into. And then next month, I'll be traveling to West Yellowstone for a high school job fair to talk to the kiddos there about the resources available to them and just kind of what my work looks like, and open it up to them the opportunity to work in healthcare without having to go, you know, get a master's as a therapist.
So this all sounds quite positive, very strong. How do you include community members? How could one sign up? What are the ways people could assist this program?
There are a number of ways. Our website is www.sufferoutloud.org, and on there you can sign up for our newsletter and you know, keep updated on when workshops are coming up and when there are fundraising campaigns happening, and other resources to advocate for folks struggling with mental health. But if you go to our website, you can also sign up to be a volunteer on there as well. Other than that, coming to the workshops is a great way to get involved and just be part of the community, or even teaching a workshop. And there is also a submission form on our website to submit, what do we call it? Like, submit a proposal for the kind of workshop that you would like to teach, and then we'd work together to kind of get it up on its feet. Then, let's see. Everything's really on the website. You can find the link to the mental health care scholarship there, if you're looking for them, or if you want to get involved and reach out to me. Our email is on there, and I am always happy to bring resource cards to you if you want to, you know, just help get the word out about the work that we're doing, or, you know, have that resource available to any clients that you work with, and just kind of be part of the prevention and remind people that it's okay to ask for help.
I was always interested in the ideology surrounding mental health issues, if you will, the politics of it, and more than that, just kind of irrational thoughts that have been around the area of mental health since the beginning of time, if you will. But I'm wondering, any interface you have with politicians or to try to help people who have funds, public funds, to help combat the mental health issues?
We really don't engage with politicians, mostly because we want to maintain that we are non-partisan organization and make sure that we're elevating the idea that no matter who you are, how you identify, you have mental health and you are worthy of support and help. That being said, I am, I do try to join the, it's like a volunteer committee with, give me a second, I'm trying to think of what they're called, the American Association for Suicide Prevention. They have volunteer committees and chapters, you know, across the U.S., and that is really where you can begin to speak with politicians and lobby on behalf of, like, getting more funding rerouted to the mental health care sector. And they'll get together monthly, and they'll talk about, okay, what are their priorities? Where do we want to ask for attention, you know, this month or this time around? So that is a way that we kind of, like, get around that, just me as a separate representative working as a committee volunteer with them or chapter volunteer with them. Did I answer that question?
Yeah.
I've always wondered about and looked at the people who look at individual responsibility versus group responsibility. There are some who err on maybe one side or the other. For example, on individual responsibility, if you have a, you mentioned earlier, like in maybe certain areas, people think you ought to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps and you shouldn't reach out for help and you ought to man up or cowboy up and take care of your own issues, versus what the group can do, that whether it be family, government, church, not-for-profits, on how those can they can help. I'll just give you a quick story and get back to you. I once was asked to be a counselor at a very right-wing, if you will, Christian fundamentalist university, where I ended up working for 22 years in spite of my more being on the other end of things. But the view was there for years that if you had a so-called mental health problem, it was really a moral problem. It was that you weren't Christian enough, if you didn't really need counseling, because if you just really were morally good enough and prayed enough and were religious enough, you wouldn't have any problems. When I was first hired there by a dean who was more progressive, I was supposed to be working part-time, and I like a week or two, had a waiting list that I couldn't get to. Instead of working 20 hours a week, I was working 40 for half-time pay. And then after a while, I left there and then was begged to come back, which I did after 2 years. And it was overwhelming with the number of people. They were very, very good people, in my opinion, as most people are. And they were Christian enough. They were moral enough. They were good people. But they had mental health problems, and as we all do at one time or another. So getting through that, I still see that being out there. It's not gone away. Is individuals versus groups. How much does government intervene to provide funds and to help versus individual groups like yours, churches? Somehow, in communication, we can all get together and really tackle the problem, but it's still out there. It's still a major issue. I just wanted to throw that into the discussion.
No, I really appreciate that. It's something that I don't I don't spend much time talking with people about that, but it's such a good point. My mom was raised very, very Catholic, and I can see, like, she's never really seen a therapist, and she didn't grow up in a time where it was okay to see a therapist. And if she was ever dealing with mental health, it was like hysteria, or just, you're a woman, you're emotional, you know. And I think a lot of that does stem from just growing up as a Catholic. Like, if you confess and apologize for your sins and just pray, God will answer your prayers and things will get better. And I do think that that mentality is slowly changing in a lot of the churches. We did have a pastor actually recently come to one of our events and requested that we try to collaborate in some way to bring resources to their church. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay, things are slowly shifting, but it is a really good point to remember and think about those things, and especially the older generations who grew up in very devout Christian homes might not have grown up with the permission to be like, I'm actually just really sad and dealing with some depression. I might need to go to the doctor.
I also found out that it always, when it becomes personal, then it views change rather quickly. Years ago, and I've done a lot of lobbying on behalf of psychological associations in the past, is that there was one bill at a national level to authorize certain mental health funds and changes in the mental health system in a positive way, and they needed just one or two votes. And it turned out that a senator from New Mexico at the time, and since I'm kind of old, this is years ago, so is that this person had a family member, a daughter, who I think ended up having a diagnosis of schizoaffective disorder. And he went from being from far right to progressive on knowing that this is extremely important, and I understand it now. So unfortunately, it takes that kind of sober reckoning for people to sometimes change their thinking on it.
Yeah, just having that personal experience with it and coming to terms with it. I do, you know, I grew up with quite a bit of depression, and I remember there was a lot of like guilt from my mom of like, what did I do wrong? Which makes it even more difficult to speak out when you're not feeling well, or you're dealing with mental health struggles sometimes. But if you don't tell them, or they're not like involved with your mental health, oftentimes your family, they don't know until there is that, what you said, an awakening or reckoning.
Yeah. And to me, I don't see mental health as a political thing. I see it as a human thing. And so perhaps some of your volunteers could be those who help to lobby for more help to really more seriously address the major problems that we have with mental health.
Yeah, I think with the National Association of Suicide Prevention, that they already have something so strongly formed that would, if people wanted to volunteer to get more involved in like lobbying, that would probably be the better option, is to go there and register as like one of their volunteer advocates. And I'm always, I'm always open to volunteers coming to me and helping to, you know, raise awareness and help to destigmatize. But we don't necessarily have a volunteer program that's fully developed and would allow for that kind of involvement. It's coming.
Why should?
It takes time, and I'm working on it and building some sort of volunteer program that's really active and kind of has a little bit of guidance, but I need to, you know, write down the policies and figure out how to set up volunteers up for success. And in that way, I think the best way to succeed in helping to lobby for funding to be moved into the mental health world would be to go to the National Association of Suicide Prevention.
Certainly, it's a big job, but I'm glad you're making a segue toward that work as well. And I know that you're really trying to be operative on a person-to-person level with those out in the valley here who have mental health problems. How would one contact your agency? We talked about 988, but how does one contact your office to volunteer or ask for help? How do you make your way into the community to reach out?
Yeah, so you can always call me, 406-220-6832, or email info@sufferoutloud.org. And again, there is a contact form on our website, and there's a volunteer form on our website, but if you'd rather just reach directly out to me, you can do that. And I do want to say that we serve statewide, so you don't have to be in Bozeman to reach out. I will send resource cards anywhere in the state of Montana. I'm always happy to partner or try to collaborate with people in other counties. I am local here, so it is easiest for me to do the events locally in Gallatin County. But if somebody has an idea or wants to try something out, I'm totally willing to travel when it's appropriate or if I'm able and have the capacity. And you can apply for scholarships from any point in the state of Montana, as long as you're seeing a licensed provider. So those are kind of the ways that you can get in touch with me. The email, info@sufferoutloud.org, is probably the easiest and quickest way.
We've had a number of people on the program who have been following Bozeman Health's efforts at getting more inpatient beds or keeping people with more serious mental health problems local rather than having to transport them to Billings, Helena, or elsewhere. And then there are the Warm Springs hospital problem that I think is being addressed somewhat now. But are you involved with much with keeping up with the Bozeman Health and Gallatin County's efforts at giving more help to those who have more intensive problems?
I am. I mean, not directly involved with the development. I know they're getting ready to open, I think in 2024, they're going to open the like behavioral health ER, like specific ER space. But I make sure that I leave my resource cards with in the behavioral health department. I've reached out with them who have been developing the new emergency program that'll open next year, to just let them know that we're around, that we're here to support. But, you know, without having my own, professional licensure in the mental health field in some way, it's difficult to see how, you know, difficult for me to participate in the development of their program itself, and they're super busy. So the most I really do is just reach out, pop in, make sure that they know I'm around so that they can refer people to us. And then I support when they reach out to us by helping them find that more long-term care and fund that long-term care with a licensed professional.
So in a way, you're like a counselor to the person who needs counseling on how to achieve that goal. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, kind of.
Very needed. Very much,
yeah.
So. And we really appreciate what you and Kathy Jackson are trying to do for the state and particularly for Gallatin Valley.
And we do have a board of eight, and they're all amazing and really, really committed and passionate. Everybody comes and serves from a place of personal experience. Everybody has either experienced suicide loss of a loved one or has experienced their own mental health struggles or witnessing somebody in their life really struggle with mental health. So I really want to make sure to give the entire board credit because I couldn't do this work without their support as an entire team behind me.
I sort of get the drift. Are you trying to say, Danny, that anybody could experience a mental health difficulty and that we all might be within the category here?
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I thought, yeah. So it behooves us to take this very seriously, and this effort I really applaud. I really do. And
thank you.
Kathy Jackson has created a movement that I think I can only see it growing. What are your projections for what you would like to achieve in the next few years, Danny?
Oh my goodness. It's amazing the growth that I have seen since coming on as the first employee. And that's indicative of the fact that it's so needed and people want to see this work happening. And that mental health care is in such high demand. So already we have grown so much that, like, in the next 2 to 3 years, preferably sooner than that, I really hope to bring on some sort of operations or programs manager. We are getting ready to do strategic planning, because we'd like to begin developing chapters that can live within different areas of the state of Montana, so that, you know, rather than us going into a community and being like, here's the help you need, let us help you, we want to create some kind of program where folks can will work kind of underneath a Suffer Out Loud umbrella in their own chapter and define together and for themselves what it is that they need to address mental health struggles in their county or community. It'd be great to get an office space. It's not super needed right now since I'm the only employee, but I want one really bad.
Okay, people out there in the valley, here's your opportunity to provide an office space for this very totally awesome group. I was wondering, NAMI reports that 47,000 adults in Montana did not receive mental health care, and 48.6 did not receive that care simply because of the cost. So how is it that when you're helping people, how does that work? The money seems to be, just to get down to basics here, one of the prime mm-hmm. difficulties.
Yes, it is. Our program is super simple. If you apply, you get it, but the money goes directly to the provider that you select. So I do the kind of legwork and talking to the provider, getting them into our bill pay system, and then they send us invoices after each session, and I cut them a check and pop it in the mail. So it's really simple. And if you receive a scholarship, you can reapply as many times as you need to until you're able to either pay for it yourself, or you finally get insurance, or whatever the case may be, or your insurance begins covering it. But there are no limits to the number of times that you can apply for a scholarship, as long as you don't have an open and active scholarship already. So
you may have already,
yeah, it's a pretty simple program.
You may have already huh? said this, but how are you funded?
Are we funded? We are, I'd say, primarily grant funded. We got a very amazing, generous major gift this year that is helping us grow, of almost $50,000. And we have a 3-year, multi-year grant from MJ Murdoch. We receive funding from a number of different foundations around the state, or like regionally, really. And then we also do Give Big every year, every May, and that's our biggest fundraiser of the year. So I'd say a small portion of our funding comes from ongoing donations just from community members, especially during Give Big. And then the majority of our funding comes from the foundations.
So it sounds like it's all private then. Is that correct? Rather than
as opposed to
government, yeah.
I suppose. You mean like private in what way?
Oh, that there's not any federal grants or state grants. It's all foundations and individuals?
Yes, thank you for clarifying. Correct. I put in my first application to a state agency like a couple weeks ago, so that may change. But for right now, it's all private funding.
I think it's remarkable that you see that need for financial support, and that part of your giving to the community is direct payment for counseling services for those who need it, even though it is limited in scope because there's only so much available. It looks like to me you're providing direct care services to many individuals who apply for your scholarships.
It's true. Oh, and I'd like to go back to City of Bozeman. Actually, last year they funded us $15,000 specifically just for scholarships, and are refunding us this year as well. So we do have that, and they know that it's needed. So I suppose we are giving direct care. I guess I always think of direct care in the way that a doctor might give direct care, but yeah, I do work one-on-one with scholarship recipients to make sure that their mental health care is being funded, to make sure that I'm available for support, to answer any questions or do any research and digging that they might need support with.
Well, from my professional perspective, I consider that direct care, getting the person to a licensed therapist and paying for those services by helping the community organize this situation, is direct care of the finest sort. Thank you for all that work.
Well, thank you. Actually, that's interesting. I've always said otherwise, but I guess I do. I do also spend a significant amount of time just on the phone hearing people's stories. You know, sometimes when people feel like, a lot of people don't realize that you can call 988 even if you're not feeling suicidal. If you're feeling like you're in crisis and you need to talk to somebody, they will answer and they'll talk to you and they'll just make sure that you're not in danger and they'll hear your story. There's always somebody available to talk to you. A lot of people call me because they don't realize that they can call a 988 anyway. So they'll call me and I'll just sit on the phone and hear their story and validate their experience, because everybody's experience is valid. And kind of help them walk through some things that they needed to say out loud, which is one of my favorite parts of the job, even though it's difficult, you know, carrying a motion of all of our community members with our community members. But it's really fulfilling to see people call and kind of watch them start to take deep breaths before we hang up and feel like they're going to be okay for the rest of the day.
Well, there's lots of research to support catharsis on the part of the individuals who's able to pour his or her heart out. There's also lots of research to what you're saying of listening, that it takes a toll on the listener, because if you're empathetic, then you're using part of your energy and mental health balance to support this other person. So you need to take good care of yourself too, Danny.
Thank you. I'm super grateful to work for an organization. The board and Cassie make a huge point to remind me that my health is always more important than a day's work. And it's hard for me to remind myself that, like, you know, if I'm getting compassion fatigue or I'm having my own emotional setbacks, that I'm allowed to take a day off. But I have unlimited mental health care days. Because I'm a human being, and
perfect.
You know, you can't say, well, you get three a year because you only get three breakdowns a year. We can't control our emotions in that way, you know?
Yeah.
And it's amazing to feel really respected and honored in that way. And I feel like I work much harder than I have at any other job, that has given me those like limitations on my health.
Well, we applaud your efforts. I remember when Arliss had a full caseload of counselees, I could tell the days he came home when he'd had a parent who'd lost a teenage son suddenly. Oh. I could just see it in the way he walked in his stance, in his speech. Everything was heavier and a little bit slowed down. And I remember that taking such a toll on him, because if you're truly an empathetic person, then that's part of you also. So it's a real thing, and I'm so glad to hear that they're comprehending that what you do takes a lot.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And it is, it's really interesting when you come across people who are struggling, how it's hard to let that go after a work day. I used to work with inmates, and we'd do theater, and I'd hear a lot of really difficult and tragic stories of people behind bars, from these people behind bars, and I'd often just go home and cry.
So
it's important to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves, no matter who we are in the community, if you're empathetic. And I think everybody has the potential to feel everything that's going on around us. I mean, there's a significant amount of collective grief since COVID happened, and rising suicide rates are happening, you know, that we need to remember to take care of ourselves and to allow ourselves to have those tough days, but not to let those tough days win.
Yeah, we need to pump the spirits back in and up, because really... Mm-hmm. Looking at NAMI's information, one person in the U.S. dies by suicide every 11 minutes. So, first of all, we need to take seriously that people need us to reach out, no matter how difficult it may be for us. It's more difficult mm-hmm. for them. And so this again underlines that what you're doing is really a magnificent effort to approach a problem that seems somehow overwhelming right now to our national community.
It is overwhelming. I feel like, and I read that this morning too, and it's hard to read these stats, especially as they continue to be updated. We were bumped down, according to the CDC, we were bumped down from third in the nation to second again, so right behind Wyoming. So now that we're second highest rate of suicide in the nation, it's scary to think that, you know, so much work is being done and there are resources available, but there are so many barriers in place that are preventing people from getting the help that they really need. And I'm hoping that we're helping to break down some of those barriers. I really try to do as much as I can in whatever ways I can, but yeah, things are getting tough, and I hear it in the discourse just from talking to friends, family, the people who call Suffer Out Loud. Like, there's something in the air right now, and things have gotten really tough this year, and I don't know if I can fully define why.
I noticed that you mentioned Wyoming and Montana, and there are two of those states that want to be extremely independent, and again, back to the... pull yourself mm-hmm. up by your own bootstraps. I hope people out there are listening that while that is good, great independent responsibility, a rugged individuality, however, no one lives in a vacuum. There are people around us that can help. And just asking for it mm-hmm. or those who may notice that someone in their family or their group is having difficulty in spite of that person's denial, there may need to be a way of developing a relationship, providing help, talking to them. And at some level, sometimes an intervention, which is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Just saying, look, we love you, we care for you, we want you to get help, and here's a way of doing it. Your group, Help Center, 988, any number of others who can help. Someone in your church group or... and hopefully that would be helpful to you. But your group is one of them that they could reach out to.
Correct, yes. And I would say one of the things that I've learned in pretty much all of my suicide prevention trainings is that at the end of the day, just assume that you're right and ask the question. And don't just say, are you going to harm yourself, or are you in danger, or are you safe? Say the word, because if they hear it out loud, they're more likely to answer. I don't know. They're going to feel less shame or guilt around it, you know, if you don't dance around the word and you say, are you thinking about suicide? Say the word. Let's destigmatize it, you know. Let's hear it out loud, because it's a big deal and it's a serious thing. And if you can't ask them, it's totally okay to find somebody that you trust and love to approach them with this question as well. But always assume that either you're correct that they're thinking about it and just ask, or that you might be the only person that does ask. And if you're wrong, well, the alternative is better, you know.
Certainly.
I'd rather be wrong than lose somebody.
I've learned over the years in frequent workshops that teach this, but and I do veterans evaluations now fairly often, but one of the questions is not, do you think of suicide, but how often have you had thoughts of wanting to harm yourself or suicide? And that assumes that we all have fleeting thoughts, but how often, and then they can talk about it. Some deny it, others say, well, I have the thought, but it's not something I'm going to do right away. It's not a current, imminent threat. And so you just make note of where they are. And I'm proud to say that the VA offers, when we do a report, like a kind of a graded scale, high risk, medium risk, low risk, and you do your best to evaluate where that person is, and they will independently reach out to those at the high end, make a phone call, or in some cases send people out to help mm-hmm. if they get I would say turned in, but reported as being
right.
high risk. But yes, I agree with you. You use the word. You don't beat around it.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that, and I never realized how smart, like, words matter in the ways in which we use them matter so much. And every time I go to see my psychiatrist, I have to answer those questions. How many times have you had those thoughts? How many within the past 2 weeks or whatever? And that assumption really helps make you feel safer in answering honestly, or even just answering at all. It's interesting.
Another question that's thrown in there, and it's for those that you have a suspicion that the intensity of the issues have kind of a break with reality, how often do you have thoughts that you imagine hearing people talking to you or seeing visions? How often does that happen? Oh, no, that never happens. Or, well, and then describe. But then one can intervene, and whether it's a visit to a medical professional, a medication, or whatever, or both, can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And I've found that that's, I don't like being on a medication, but I know that my mental health declines if I'm not on an antidepressant. And the goal is to train my brain to be able to make the chemicals itself, and eventually I can go off of it, right?
Exactly.
I never push medication on anybody, but I have noticed, and I have a few friends who have lost siblings to suicide recently, within the past couple of years, and refused as long as they could medication because of, there was a stigma behind it. And they're like, I just don't want to mess with that. Or they don't, it is a scary jump that first time you decide, actually, I might need a little help from an antidepressant, or I might need something for a mental health struggle like anxiety or, PTSD, OCD, whatever somebody might have. And it's also a weird feeling like you being diagnosed also comes with the stigma. I know therapists who work hard not to diagnose because they believe that it can limit the way that they receive care or the way that they think about themselves. It can also help, though, to know what it is that's happening to you and to have a word for it. So it kind of just depends on the person and the provider and finding that right fit around it. But there are a lot of people in my life who have refused medication until it got really scary and got too close to them almost taking their own lives, you know, and they're like, okay, oh, I need a little extra help. So
what's very interesting about
in whatever
that
way
is that most of these people, myself, others, take medication for any variety of things. It could be high blood pressure, diabetes, osteoporosis. It goes on and on. Headache, mm-hmm. migraine. Yet, this area still has that aura of, oh, no. It's some kind of like a mystical, evil spirit mm-hmm. that, oh, no, you can't do that. Because, well, why? We have a brain. We have mental health. We have physical health. If you need the medicine, then you need to take it. And pair it with counseling as well. And it's a bridge, hopefully a bridge that you can continue to journey over and maybe get totally across it. Maybe you'll need to do it occasionally. But the mm-hmm. help is there, and great advances have been made in those areas. So, hey, I'm glad to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, there's just so many different angles that you can find stigmas around mental health that are like, okay, let's say this out loud.
Yes. Well, we're running out of time here shortly. We'd like for you to once again give the phone number for Suffer Out Loud.
You bet. Suffer Out Loud's phone number is 406-220-6832. You can call anytime, Monday through Friday, between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. I do want to remind people that I am the only employee, so if I do not answer, please leave a voicemail. I'm often either in a meeting or doing an event or you know, on a different phone call, but I will always call you back.
And I know that you're going to give preference in your phone calls to people in a state of crisis, and that can sometimes take up a portion of your time, and we could all be patient when trying to reach you.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Then there's suffer.
And if for some reason you reach out in crisis and I don't answer, just a reminder that 988, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, that's available 24/7.
Yes.
Then there's a website, sufferoutloud.org. Is that correct?
Correct.
And on there, if people want to make a contribution, they can do it. If they want to volunteer, they can offer. And then there are other information there regarding the scholarship for therapy. So everything is there, I assume.
Everything is there. And if for some reason you can't find something, just give me a phone call or shoot us an email at info@sufferoutloud.org, and I will help you navigate the website or just send you the information directly.
What I really love about this program, it doesn't require an advanced degree to help with this. It doesn't require specific training. It just requires a desire to reach out and help members of the community, one out of every five who's struggling with mental health right now.
Yes, thank you. So you can help whoever you are if you want to get involved, whatever your education is and whatever your age. We have a number of amazing high school students who volunteer with us every now and then to help push our mission forward.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great program.
Thank you. You have a great program. Thank you. And we have less than a minute. I'll just say to the listeners, we thank Suffer Out Loud representatives, and hopefully you can call and volunteer and see what help they offer. And KGVM.org, please go there and check out this program. It'll be in the archives. It'll be, scroll down to Health and Happiness. You can listen to it again. And this program, you can hear on Monday evenings and again repeated on Thursday mornings. So thank you, Gallatin Valley. Thank you, Suffer Out Loud. And you guys have a nice life. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you having us on.